The Honorable, the United States Court of Appeals for the First Circuit is now in session. All persons having any business before this honorable court may draw near, give their attendance, and they shall be heard. God save the United States of America and this honorable court.
Okay, please be seated.
Court is in session. Today's cases will be called as previously announced, and the times will be as allotted to counsel. The first case today is number 25-1041, United States versus Miguel Gonzalez Araujo. At this time, would counsel for the United States please introduce himself on the record to begin?
Thank you. May it please the court, Eric Fagan for the government. With the court's indulgence, I'd like to reserve 2 minutes of my time for rebuttal, please.
You may. And you may proceed.
Thank you, Judge Helpe. This case, as the affiant testified at the suppression hearing, the focus of the investigation was on a phone number. The officers did everything they could to identify the phone number. Shortly before obtaining the warrant and shortly before seizing the phone, they obtained the records from T-Mobile. And they basically had three, or if you want to think about it, four points of identity for the phone. They had the phone number that they started with, which was the focus of the investigation, because that was what was used in the Viber chat where child pornography was exchanged. They knew that phone was registered to Miguel Gonzalez Araujo. They knew that it was an iPhone, and they thought that it was an iPhone 6S, because that is
me, counselor. I don't think anybody is disputing that they had reliable information at the point that they went to seize the telephone. But when they seized the telephone, at some point they realized that that phone was not the phone, and this is what the district court focused on. And there was a lapse in time between seizure of the phone and then submission of the phone for search. And that was the period that the lower court faulted the police for not getting a warrant during that time. Once they realized that the phone was a different phone and there was time to actually obtain a warrant. So if you could address that, please.
Sure, Your Honor. Let me give, I think, essentially four responses to that. Number one is just, you know, I don't want to quibble too much about the terminology, but I don't think it's fair to say that the officers didn't realize that this wasn't the phone. They certainly realized later that day that they had an iPhone 13, not an iPhone 6S. But as I was getting to, they had numerous points of identification. They knew by that time it was the right phone number. It was also an iPhone, and it had been seized from Miguel Gonzalez Araujo. During the interview, he indicated that he was worried about not having it because then he wouldn't have a phone, and that he had his lawyer's number on it, indicating that it had the data on it. And I think the judge, as Your Honor just mentioned, the only rationale the district court gave for not applying the good faith exception to the exclusionary rule here was simply that the officers could have obtained a fresh warrant that said 13 instead of 6S. And I think that's wrong for three principal reasons. Number one is because the question is not whether they could have obtained another warrant. The question is whether it was reasonable to believe that the warrant they had covered it. And the second thing is, I think
it was certainly reasonable at the point that they seized the phone, but why did it stay reasonable at the point they realized that the place to be searched was not the place to be searched?
Well, I think they didn't realize that because the focus of the investigation was on the phone. I think it's common knowledge, and the magistrate judge said this, and I don't really take it to be disputed, that when you have a phone, you tend to people, when they get a new phone, tend to move the data into the new phone. And I think the second point I would say is that I think this court's precedents basically squarely are on all fours and are all on our side on this. You have cases that find no Fourth Amendment violation at all, despite some inconsistency, like Moss, where you have the right tracking number but the wrong description for a package, like Vega Figueroa, which is a case in which the officers have a warrant for one apartment in building 44, and they search, I think, the same apartment in building 45. And then you have a couple of more recent cases, Woodbury and Pimentel, where officers unquestionably have a warrant. I mean, in Figueroa, by the way, is a case where unquestionably they searched the absolute wrong apartment. Then you have more recent cases like Pimentel and Woodbury, where the court applies the good faith exception, I think, in circumstances very like this. In Woodbury...
Can I just... I read those cases and I understand your argument. I'm just trying to figure out how to apply them to technology. The warrant here was quite clear that it, you know, defined the device, and the device was a specific type of iPhone. And I think the defense counsel has raised an argument in the brief about if we were to rule in the government's favor here, how broadly would our ruling go? So, for instance, you can have multiple Apple devices. I'll just be honest that I'm not a technology expert, but you can have multiple Apple devices that have the same phone number. For instance, an iPad and Apple Watch can all be connected to the same number as an actual phone. So how broadly would your argument go? I mean, that this was a warrant for a specific device, an iPhone 6S, if I'm getting the number and the letter correct. The police realize that is not what they've seized on the very same day. I mean, it's written up in their notation of what they have in their possession. They don't get a warrant. So what if they had seized other devices with that phone number? What is the combination of factors that you think makes it objectively reasonable for the agent here to say, okay, I don't have an iPhone 6S, I have a different iPhone. People can store things sort of on the hard drive version of those phones, but I'm going to search this other phone anyway. So what are the factors that put together you think make it okay for the search here in this sort of different technology context?
Sure. So first of all, we're not asking for a very broad ruling at all. I think a ruling on the good faith exception would largely foreclose the case from setting much of a rule going forward. And also, Your Honor, I would note that for the same reason Your Honor may be having a little trouble translating the apartment cases to technology, I would submit that the officers would likewise have the same problem, and I think that militates in favor of the good faith exception here. To answer your question about multiple devices, what if they had found, say, an iPad answering to that phone? I don't think our argument has to reach that. And I think the basic intuition here, and it was backed up by things the defendant said during the interview, is that when you have a phone, and it is your only phone, as he had indicated that this was, and you're worried about not having it because you're going to lose your contacts on it, as he indicated he would be when he was worried about an inability to contact his lawyer, I think it is a very fair inference that this is essentially the same phone in different housing. I don't want to get too philosophical about when Theseus's ship stops being his ship because you keep replacing the wooden planks on it, but I think essentially this was the physical manifestation of the phone number they were looking for. Another line Your Honor might draw just to cabin the precedential effect of this decision, and you could consider some of these questions going forward if the need arises, is that the focus of this investigation was the phone number. You could imagine a case where for some reason the actual physical phone was for some reason relevant because you might believe it odds have some DNA or something.
Again, that's the sort of where my question was going. If the focus was the phone number, you could have multiple devices with the same phone number. So I think it would be concerning to suggest that they could have seized an iPad with that phone number when the warrant was for a phone with the phone number. So again, what are the factors that you think all put together make this reasonable when they clearly know they have the wrong type of phone?
Well, Your Honor, I do think, we're not arguing that had he had an iPad in his pocket somehow or in a backpack that we could have seized that. I think it's important that it was a phone, that they knew that it was apparently his current phone, that there was some indication that it had he had data, his current data on it. There was an indication that he did not have another phone. And I think all of those factors kind of taken together make this a very narrow case, particularly if the court were to apply the good faith exception. Again, the only real difference here is the hardware type. I can see my time has run out.
One additional question regarding the good faith exception. I understand from the briefs, when the agents read Gonzalez Arrocho the Miranda rights, and they had the phone which was seized, which was the not the iPhone 6, it was the other one, but he gave consent to search that phone. He gave him the password, and he gave him some information. Yeah, these sites are available through the phone. Am I correct in that?
He did. All we're relying on is the magistrate judge's finding, which I take to be unchallenged, and this is at pages 16 and 17 of the addendum.
But I'm asking beyond that. It's part of the record. Wouldn't that go to the good faith exception, or maybe even consent? Because if he consents and provides passwords to that phone...
There was a finding below that by the district court that he did not consent to the search of the phone. Basically,
you're not arguing.
We are not contesting that.
Okay.
I do believe, Your Honor, you can consider the interview that is part of the record. The same way in Pimentel, the court applied the good faith exception after considering what the defendant told him. In that case, he said, "My shotguns are in the upstairs apartment." And in Pimentel and Woodbury, just as in this case, the court, it could have been said that the officers could have gotten another warrant. And so I just don't think the district court's rationale can be squared with this court's precedent. I thank you for the court's indulgence. I realize I went a little over my time.
Thank you. Thank you, counsel. At this time, would counsel for the appellee please introduce himself on the record to begin?
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. I am AFP De Celso Perez, arguing on behalf of Mr. Gonzalez. And I'd just like to pick up on a few of the issues that were being discussed, beginning with this idea that the focus of the investigation was not the phone. That's not an accurate description of the record. The investigation that gives rise to probable cause in this case comes from a very specific set of facts. And that is that in the summer of 2021, a specific phone number with a Puerto Rico phone number is engaging with a chat room. The government proceeds to then ask T-Mobile for records of this phone number. And it is written all over the search warrant and search warrant application affidavit that the search is for a specific device. Not only is it for a specific model.
But I mean, by your own statement just now, you're saying that the suspicion arose with the number.
Right, Your Honor.
It was only because of the number that you then go to try to figure out, well, from what device does this number emanate?
But,
and so why is the government says shouldn't the focus be really on the phone number attached to whatever device?
Because as Judge Rickleman was pointing out, this is something that lacks particularity, or I don't mean to put words in the judge's mouth, but this is this kind of broad, a phone number is not something that can be readily searched. What can be searched is the hardware device. And the affidavit makes it clear that what the government is looking for is media that has been downloaded to a specific piece of hardware. And not only...
Counsel, why though, trying to apply the apartment cases to here, why wasn't it enough, or why wasn't it objectively reasonable for an agent to decide, I have a warrant for a device, an Apple device that is a phone with this phone number, and I have executed the warrant, and I now have an Apple device that is a phone with this phone number. It's a different model. But why isn't that enough for the good faith exception? Just like in the apartment cases, an agent could decide, and courts have held it was objectively reasonable that when I have a warrant to search the residence or apartment of a particular person, and I find out as I'm doing it that the apartment of that particular person is two rather than three, then it's okay, I can go ahead and continue the search. Why is that reasoning wrong?
Four reasons. And four reasons why the apartment cases, Woodbury and Pimentel, are specifically distinguishable. First is the text of the warrant in those cases. There's some baseline ambiguity in that text about we are searching for a residence, we're not sure where this person resides within that residence, number one. Number two, in both of those cases, the fact pattern you have is officer goes to apartment X, asks for clarification at that point, and says, hey, we're looking for so-and-so. We believe they have some sort of contraband. Then they apply that information, and then they actually conduct the search at the object.
I know you have two more points, but why isn't that the same as here, where your client did say this was his, putting aside any consent issues, which I know are not before us, but your client did say, yes, this is my phone, mm-hmm. and yes, this is the phone number for that phone. So why doesn't that translate?
Well, two reasons.
And also, this is my only phone.
Two reasons. First, he never says it is his only phone. He does allude to the fact that he may not have certain phone numbers, but as a threshold matter, and this goes back to the idea of deterring misconduct and the idea that suppression here is meant to deter something. The initial interaction these officers have is, we are searching for your phone. Here is a search warrant that authorizes search of your phone. At no point do they say, this is a search warrant for an iPhone 6. And part of our argument is that the fact that they do this repeatedly over the course of 5 minutes is an objective indication of something, of this getting close to either reckless or intentional misconduct. It is only after that fact that then they engage with the client. Number two, and the record is clear, the prosecution actually concedes this below at A239, which is part of the hearing. The prosecution says, it's not only the day of the search, the day of the seizure, that the officers realize their mistake. But it's as soon as they access that phone and they open that phone that they realize a mistake has been made. And what is the first thing that someone would do if they were trying to execute the warrant according to the text? This line comes in part from Pimentel and the Garrison case. Well, the first objective thing one would do is say, wait a minute, where is the iPhone 6 that is the actual object of this warrant? So what the government is inviting the court to do is much more akin to a subjective reasonableness analysis, where once the court considers the totality of objective reasons here, the argument falls apart. And there is nothing objectively they can point to that says that these officers were actually looking for the phone that is the object of the warrant. And I highlight a couple of things from the district court opinion, and then as we argue on appeal. Because this court can consider anything that is apparent from the record, there are a couple of additional reasons on the record that are absolutely clear. In terms of the district court, it's not only this idea of exigent circumstances, which I'll just point out was part of my list of four. In Pimentel, there are exigent circumstances. They're looking for guns. And that's part of the reason that this panel, or a panel of this court, says it may be justified. Woodbury does not explicitly use the term exigent circumstances, but it's likewise a guns and drug case where they're trying to execute.
So can I ask you that? Because as the government has argued, the test that we're applying is whether it was objectively reasonable at the time mm-hmm. to conclude that this different phone could be searched given the warrant that was issued. How, as a legal matter, how does the fact that they may have had time to get a new warrant really impact that analysis? Aren't we just looking at what do you know then and looking at the warrant that you have, is it objectively reasonable for you to go ahead and conduct the search of the different phone?
Well,
I'm just not quite sure how legally that argument fits in. Do you have any response?
My sense, without putting words into the district court's mouth, my sense is that they were getting at the same idea of, if the officers are trying to execute a warrant according to the terms of the warrant, and then they realize their mistake, the district court said the day of, we would argue during the interrogation, the objectively reasonable thing to do is to raise some sort of question, to ask Mr. Gonzalez in the moment of the interrogation. If not, then for some reason they forgot, then tell someone something, do some sort of investigation, maybe even do the kind of investigation the government raises here about how likely is it that data is transferred from one. None of that is in the record.
But the government is saying that your client said he had no other phone, and you just told us, the government says that your client said he had no other phone, and you just told us he didn't say that.
I don't think that's exactly correct, because
what is that factual
dispute? The iPhone 6, for all we know, and this was the government's burden below, this was part of the officer's responsibility in terms of a good faith investigation. For all we know, the iPhone 6 was sitting in Mr. Gonzalez Arocho's home. The record's completely silent on this point. So had they encountered him and said, hey, we're looking for your iPhone 6, then it would be a completely different case where he could.
So you're saying the record doesn't actually ever show them saying directly, do you have another phone?
I know that the record does not say that. And that's sort of the crux, or one of the cruxes of the matter. Had the officers said, Mr. Gonzalez, where is your iPhone 6? And he would have said, oh, wait a minute, I just updated my phone. This one's in my bedroom. I'll go get it for you. It would be a completely different case.
Counsel, let me ask you, I asked opposing counsel some questions as to this and as to whether it was consent. But looking at Judge Delgado's opinion and the report and recommendation, but didn't your client give the passcode and the credential for the iPhone 13 to the agent?
Yes, he did give the passcode, but again, at no point did the officers tell him what we are looking for and what this warrant authorizes us to search is an iPhone 13.
Your client knows it's an iPhone 13 they've seized, and he's getting the password, and he's getting credentials, so doesn't that become consent?
Well, first of all, the consent issue, as Brother Counsel pointed out, was not challenged on appeal. So both the magistrate judge and the district court judge found that consent was involuntary. They also found that it was clear from the scope of the warrant that the officers were going beyond the scope of the warrant look.
What you're saying is that when he gave the credentials and password, that was involuntary.
Yes. Well, not what I'm saying. What the district court found and what the magistrate judge found and what the government didn't challenge on appeal. So I think that's law of the case now, and that's just unchallenged before this court. The only issue here is good faith.
Well, the court found that he didn't consent. It wasn't voluntary. Does that mean that we cannot consider the uncontested facts, though, that he gave his password as part of our good faith analysis?
The court can consider that fact. What is unchallenged is that it was involuntary and that it was not a consensual search.
Okay, but the government's not challenging the voluntariness issue. So but the government still, during those interviews, they're not like point a gun and say, give me your credentials, give me. He's provides. He could have said, I don't want to provide that information. He signs a waiver of Miranda rights, correct?
Yes, Your Honor, but there's no burden on the defendant here. It's the government burden to show good faith, and it's not the defendant's actions that are at issue. When we consider the totality of the circumstances, what we're assessing is the objective reasonableness. And I'll note that
if you look from the government's perspective, if he provides a passcode, that's giving access to the phone. They have that.
Yes.
That password is what they eventually use to keep searching.
Yes, but if you're giving access to a phone where the police has repeatedly omitted what phone it is they're searching, and they've suggested to you that they have a search warrant to have access.
Did your client read that search warrant? He was given a copy of the search warrant referring to iPhone 6.
He was given a copy of the search warrant when he was a monolingual Spanish speaker, as he is being pointed to that.
The record that he's only a Spanish speaker?
It is in the record. When he
I thought the record was slightly different, that because his chat rooms were in English, right? And he was answering some of the questions from the agents with Spanglish.
Okay, so not a fluent English speaker. I'm sorry, Your Honor. That would be a more accurate more accurate description of the record. Excuse me. But I think the point still stands. When these officers are interrogating him, they are suggesting that they have, through their actions, through their objective actions, they're suggesting that they have an ability to search this phone.
They omitted the part of the warrant that actually described it as a warrant for an iPhone 6, correct? That's what the record
not
showed.
Only do they omit it, but they repeatedly omitted it over the course of 5 minutes when they point to the same warrant 3 times and say, and again, this goes back to the misconduct point that sort of is the overarching analysis here. What does suppression mean to deter? It means to deter this kind of behavior that happens repeatedly that suggests that this is not only reckless but probably deliberate. And so not only that instance, but then the subsequent instance of the officers realizing, oh, wait a minute, we have the wrong phone, staying silent, waiting days, and then conducting a forensic search. So if there are no further questions, we ask that this court affirm. Thank you.
Counsel, you have 2 minutes for rebuttal. If you want to remain standing where you are,
Or seated.
Please don't injure.
Come all the way down here, then not even make it the last 10 feet, but I appreciate
that. Don't injure yourself further.
Just a few quick points, Your Honors. First of all, as to the officers' reasons, the kind of implication that they were trying to trick Gonzalez Orocho, there was a finding by the magistrate judge that actually what happened here is they just didn't realize at the time they were showing him the warrant and describing it to him, that they realized at that time they had an iPhone 13. That's at pages 19 to 20 of the government's addendum. And as for whether he might have had another phone, I'm not claiming the record says that he actually said he had no other phone. I'm just claiming there are numerous indications of that, like his concern about not having a phone and needing his lawyer's number were pretty good indications that he only had one phone, which would suggest that this is the one that has all the data, particularly because this was, again, an investigation focused on a phone number. And even if you thought there might be multiple phones, Pimentel was in the process in that case of moving from like one apartment to another and kind of lived in multiple apartments. And as in that case, where when he was secured by the officers and they presumably showed him the warrant by that point, he admitted that the shotguns they were looking for were in the upstairs apartment. I think the court can consider what the defendant said here, and I don't believe opposing counsel objected to that. Neither in that case nor Woodbury, which are both cases where the court applied the good faith exception, was there any exigency. In Pimentel, they had all the mobile household members secured. In Woodbury, the defendant hadn't been alerted. They could have secured the premises once they knew which apartment was correct while they were seeking a warrant. And if those cases involve more ambiguous warrants than the warrant here, and that's the distinction, and that's when we find no Fourth Amendment exception, as the court did in Bonner, Moss, and Vega Figueroa, or we find good faith, as the court did in Woodbury and Pimentel, then all their rule is going to do is give officers every incentive to put less information in the warrant. These officers should be rewarded for doing the best investigation that they could and putting down the information they had. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you, counsel. That concludes argument in this case.